Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Wackiest News Stories of the Week. Joining me to look at all of the news that is completely unfit to print are my good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good afternoon to both of you.
Good afternoon, Simon.
Good afternoon, Simon.
Is there any truth in the rumor that L.A. has finally dried out?
No, it's dampish and it's supposed to rain again tonight. And, of course, we could be cited for telling the truth because it never rains in Los Angeles, as you know. At least that's what the song says. And so we never admit it to anybody.
Right. I mean, I've got to admit, I saw some news reports, and I was assuming that there must be a Los Angeles somewhere in the rainforest.
Boy, it seemed like it. We had 13 inches plus at our house. San Bernardino had 23 inches, which is really unheard of. I've lived here my entire life and never seen rain like this. And they had flash flood warnings in my neighborhood. I almost fell over laughing if it wasn't so serious.
Okay, I do have one more question for you, Manny. Is there any truth at all that you've been hanging out at McDonald's after having one too many?
Oh, yes, absolutely. My hands start shaking. My knees get weak. In fact, I can't even stand on my own 2 feet, I mean, to quote Elvis. But, no, I drive by McDonald's and my stomach lurches and my hands shake. And it's even though I can't eat and don't eat it, you still remember it. Same way people who smoke cigarettes look at cigarettes and they remember smoking.
I do believe there was a rather good news story this week, though, out of Burbank.
Coming back to McDonald's, we had a wonderful story, a terrible story in one respect. We had a drunk driver going through a tunnel over on the San Fernando area by Burbank. And he basically ran into somebody head-on, and, of course, he was concerned about being caught. So he took off on foot with a minor chase, and he found a wonderful hiding place, a McDonald's. Ash and I wondered, did he lock the door? You know, did he hide behind the milkshake container?
Oh, no. This is what I have a question for, Manny. Do you think this is a good defense? It's the BS defense, blood sugar defense. So maybe he was confused because he got bumped in the head and his blood sugar was thrown off, and therefore he had to go to McDonald's to get his favorite burger.
No, actually, I think people who run for the police shouldn't hide in glass houses. I mean, McDonald's are all glass. Identify him?
I do hope that what he did was go in there and, order a Big Mac, and ask them to really supersize it so he could hide behind it.
Or else pack a lunch to go to jail, one of the two. But and you know what he should have done is ordered a huge coffee and dumped it down his throat as fast as he could, because one of the things that happens with DUIs is...
Oh, don't tell that on the air.
Is if you delay... everybody knows. They try to delay in Los Angeles. Sometimes it's slow to get a guy off a police scene to a hospital, so most people refuse a breathalyzer or want a blood test, and sometimes it'll be 45 minutes to an hour before they get in the hospital, and then a little while before they get the blood test. So generally guys who take the blood test have a lower alcohol level. So if you pump the coffee, which is why he thought he went in there, but he didn't. He just went in there and sat down, hoped to pass one of the customers, and they just got him, period.
Wait a minute, he wasn't even smart enough to drink something?
No.
That's really bad.
he should have ordered something, you know? But anyway, listen, it wouldn't matter, because if he went to prison, it wouldn't really matter, because one of the news stories this week is that, and something that just drives me crazy, is we had an inmate in California who was pronounced dead in his cell 13 minutes after he was found unresponsive. The problem is, he'd been in jail waiting 10 years for the death penalty to be enforced for first-degree murder of two people on the 10 freeway in the area by USC and downtown, one of those infamous drive-by shootings we all read about. And right now, there are over 700 offenders on California death row that haven't been executed, and it drives me nuts. I'm not really for the death penalty because it's not enforced the way I'd like. My idea is if you've done it, just haul them outside and shoot them. Yes, you might get some innocent people, so we need to crack down on prosecutors. But, you know, guys living 10, 20 years in prison, writing books, marrying, having conjugal visits, having children with women who grew up to be their successor criminals. I mean, can you imagine a serial killer fathering children while in prison? Well, that goes on in a lot of different states, including California. And,
well, I think what has always bothered me, and I can't remember the exact circumstances, but that there was a gentleman destined for the needle, and had this horrible medical condition, and they actually saved his life so that they could kill him.
Right. Or once in a while they release him because they can't get good medical care. But, you know, I mean, please, if you're in jail, you're getting the medical care you deserve. And by the way, this guy, his name is John Post. He was only 42 years old when he died. And, you know, I joke and said to Ashley, he must have died from the food in prison. Because, I mean, it's not like he's running around or doing anything that would give him a heart attack. He's certainly not under a great deal of stress unless it's eating that SOS on a shingle every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But, you know, if we complain about the quality of food at McDonald's, the junk in the packages, what do you think they feed prisoners in the United States?
Well, actually, I lived in the Phoenix area for a while.
Oh, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, the sheriff there is notorious. They feed them shit on a shingle, SOS, more breakfast, lunch, and dinner. In Arizona, took away all their weight, so all these guys are turning into 500-pound inmates and dying of heart attacks in Arizona. Not that that's bad.
It's even worse than that. Sheriff Joe forces them to wear pink underwear. And,
a thongs. I imagine prisoners in thongs would help in the shower.
Right. And the bologna that they use for the meals, they actually dye green, you know, just to give it some extra meal appeal.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. But, you know, some of these people deserve it. Back to capital punishment for a moment. Do you know there are 52 condemned inmates have died of natural causes in California before they were executed? 18 more committed suicide. I mean, you know, here's a guy with a death penalty, and all he has to do is sit there and wait for his execution, and he'd rather kill himself than eat the food in prison. I mean, that's the bottom line. Only 13 out of the 700, so it'd be about 740, actually, including all the rest of deaths, about 800 death penalties, and only 13 were executed. In Missouri, they only executed one. And, you know, and all over the states, except Texas, of course, all these death penalty cases are being slowed down. And what people don't know is it costs four times as much a year to house a death penalty a prisoner in a solitaire and all the things they need to do for him, lawyers, the rest of it, then there's a regular person. So with this guy, 10 years in a California prison costs the same amount of money as keeping him on a life sentence for 40 years. So we don't even save any money when we kill him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure that I really like the death penalty. There have been too many instances, and they are rare, but it's still too many, where a life has been taken only to discover years later that, he didn't do it, we were only kidding.
Well, that's the judicial system, which is annoying because prosecutors are more concerned with notches on their belt than they are the truth. And my best friend in law school at one point ran the San Fernando Valley's district attorney's office, so I saw plenty of it, and it's not attractive. But anyway, we're talking about the negatives. Let's talk about some of the other sides of death row. There's a Texas Prison Museum in Huntsville where the prison is. And, of course, the town is in East Texas is so basically upset with their prison routine that basically they started to the museum that would hold all the different memorabilia from there. And, by the way, to give you some comparison between Texas and here, more than 400 inmates have been executed in this one prison in Huntsville in Texas, which is more than the whole rest of the nation combined. So Texas is definitely the death penalty capital of the world. But there, they have a kind of this weird relationship where they decided to build a museum to track people to the museum. Oh, wonderful. That's like Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, but real people.
Right. Is that the one where they have the original electric chair on display?
I believe they do, yes. And what's interesting about Huntsville is there basically only 35,000 people live there, and half of them are employed by the prison.
And the other half met the electric chair.
No, I imagine they work in McDonald's and sell food to the people in there, or they sell food to the prison, right? But, you know, and on top of that, they have 150,000 inmates, which means there's a lot of bad people in Texas.
Did you talk about how in the museum they have an electric chair, and then they also have a sign that Morrow Jr., J.H., he scrawled on a piece of paper what he wanted for his last meal, which was a small steak, French fries, hot biscuits, and a banana split. And this is my last meal, and damn it, I want it served on a hot, on however many plates and bowls it takes to keep it hot, from mixing any of it up together.
You know,
I like the last meal request.
You know, on behalf of all Americans, the best part about being executed is you can eat all the fast food you want and not worry about the cholesterol, fat, and sugar.
Consequences. MSG, it doesn't matter. Now, we were waiting for a caller, Jose Escamilla, who's calling in on UFOs today, and I think he's having problems finding the phone number, so maybe one of you two can email him the phone number.
Okay, I will do that right now.
That would be super.
I know, and Jose's going to talk about rods and Roswell, and his experiences over the last 20 years of dealing with UFO and conventions, and hopefully he can make it in on this show. When at least we spoke to him, and he said he would. We'll see. Email him his address, the phone number right now, and see if maybe he can call in.
Well, I'm sure it's just a little bit of confusion. Not that we aren't the parents of confusion, right?
He could be trying to call our number, which is, of course, all the lines are blocked except the one we're using right now.
Right.
We're on cap prevention, ladies.
Yes.
But in the meantime, let's move on.
Actually, I want to ask you, what are your views about the death penalty?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
You know, Manny convinces me in some respects that the worst thing that could happen to a person is living in the box the rest of your life and thinking about the damage you've done to another person and the consequences of what has happened to what you've done that has had a horrible impact on so many other lives. And I think in some respects he could be right. I mean, the thought of being locked in the rest of your life with a toilet is pretty devastating. I mean, that's and you only get all the GMO foods and crap. You can't even go make your dinner. I mean, the simplest things and all of your freedoms are removed. And I think in some respects, it actually is worse than actually being executed. And I think that's why some killers would rather commit suicide than they would actually go to prison.
I still maintain it's the food.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you can't have mom's apple pie. Yeah. I mean, somebody's poked their finger in it because it might have a knife in it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you can't even get that.
Yeah. And I don't want people to feel I'm anti-death penalty. I'm just anti-death penalty the way that it's being handled right now. If they reinstate the death penalty the way it should be, I'm all for it.
And I do understand why some people may want the death penalty. When about 10 years ago, I was trying to locate my aunt in Ohio, in Canton, Ohio, and it turned out that the woman who was the caretaker had almost murdered her, and somebody had gone to the house and found my aunt and had removed her from the house. At that moment, and she's in safety right now, and she's still in her nursing home in Louisville, Ohio, outside of Akron and Canton area. And I felt at that moment that I really wanted, there's twice in my life, I really wanted that person to be put down like a dog. But as the time passed, I realized that, you know, that anger would dominate my life, and then I would become as bad as that person. So then I went back to Manny's rule of, I think these people deserve to go to prison. I think there needs to be changes in the law, though. I think the law, like that woman ended up being protected for various reasons, and she should have gone to prison. Instead, she went on to hurting other elderly women. And for that reason, I think those people, there needs to be changes in laws to get people who deserve to be in jail, in jail. But I don't know if any of them...
I do believe that we do have our special guest on the line. Would one of you like to do the introductions?
Oh, yes, we certainly should introduce Jose. Of course, it would be help if I had his bio in front of me. So, Jose, I'm really sorry, but Jose Escamilla is a producer, director, composer, and he's known as the discoverer of the Rawlings phenomenon. And he's a very interesting guy. He's made a number of movies. He's got a lot of videos and release on L.A. gang violence. He's done other work with such people as Ruth Bussey, Richard Maltz, Boosie Kurtz, Brenda Vaccaro. And at one point in the 80s, he put together in the world event called One Minute of Peace, where he promoted everyone in the world to stop what they're doing altogether in 1 minute in honor of Samantha Smith and the children of the world. And he's performed at the Hollywood Bowl, a number of places, produced records, music, been interviewed on countless television shows, Geraldo Rivera, The Learning Channel.
Discovery.
Right, The Other Side, Inside Edition, BBC, Spanish language stations. And he's lectured anywhere from New Mexico, Colorado, and other places on his firsthand experiences with these phenomena, as well as UFOs. So, Jose, I hope I got this put together for you, and tell us a little bit about the Rawlings phenomenon.
Wait, you forgot the fact that he worked with Ashley Brooks.
Oh, yes, and he worked with my wife also, and
okay, now my ego's okay.
Okay. Jose.
Hi, Jose.
Let me butt in just for a second. Welcome to the program.
It's good to be here, Simon, and Ashley and Manny. Can you
sorry
hear me?
Sorry if we didn't hear you. You're perfect, and we're sorry if we didn't give you the right number. It was not subliminal. We really didn't want to get rid of you. It's just a rumor.
Yeah, we were just teasing you with the fact that you might be here.
It was a conspiracy theory.
It was a conspiracy. That's what it is. Dadgummit, yes.
And worse than that, he knows us well enough to know it's probably true.
Wait, Jose's coming. Give him the wrong number, whatever you do. Hi, Jose.
Hey,
do you
Ashley.
Want to tell us about what are you doing right now?
I am producing two movies right now. One is a 40-minute film called Celestial, and it's going to be for IMAX distribution. And it's a movie about the moon, the actual full-color photography of the moon. It's going to show you the moon as no one's ever seen it before. This is a photography taken by the Clementine mission back in 1994, of which there were 1.8 million digital photographs taken of the moon in full color. Now, a lot of people look at the moon right now from Earth, and we look at it, and it looks black and white, like we've always been told. But once you leave the atmosphere of the Earth, which, the atmosphere distorts a lot of things that we see in the sky, even stars. Once you leave the atmosphere of Earth, you will find out that the moon is not black and white. It's full color. And I'm producing a film, first film ever, of the full color photography of the moon. And it's going to be awesome. I mean, one of the things that NASA has done to us is that they have kept us in the fog. It's amazing. You know, I myself for 16, then I said, well, all right, the moon is black and white, and, you know, I took the Apollo photography as what it is because NASA and the government are in control, and I said, hey, what they're showing us is what's really there.
It looks gray.
What?
It looks like a gray moon.
Right. That's not the case. The moon is full color. It looks like a small planet when you look at this thing. I mean, the full color photography is just going to amaze you.
How big is it, Jose?
Well, the moon is about about a third the size of Earth, you know?
Yeah, approximately, yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's about 248,000 miles away, but it's the closest celestial body that orbits Earth. I mean, you know, the planet Jupiter is way over there and Mars and all that. The moon is the closest celestial body that orbits Earth, and it is not black and white. The atmosphere makes it look like it's black and white, but I've got full-color photography taken by the Galileo spaceship, by the way. You can go on Google right now, you and your listeners. Go to Google and type in Galileo moonshot, and it'll show you a full-color photograph of the moon. It's not black and white.
Are you piecing these still photographs together into a motion picture?
Yes, it's called Celestial. It's going to be like an IMAX movie.
Right,
okay?
Right. But no, I mean you're trying to make it so that you're effectively turning still photography into a moving image.
Yes, what I'm doing is I'm using software like Adobe After Effects, Maya, Photoshop, and you know, software like that to do fly-in, flyovers over the landscapes of the moon.
Oh,
the
wow.
Full-color photographs of the moon, actually.
Yeah, interesting enough, there is some couple of NASA specials I've seen that actually show the color footage of the moon, but what they release the general public doesn't have that. I've never understood why.
Do you know one of the most...
They've never released the full-color photography, even when the Hubble telescope... Let me tell you a little curious thing. Years ago, scientists and astronomers asked the Hubble telescope people, how come you guys haven't photographed the moon? I mean, you know, the Hubble telescope has photographed some of the most spectacular full-color images of deep space. I mean, they even had this giant photo of what looks like Christ, you know, looming over a certain area in the farther reaches of the universe. So they asked the Hubble people, hey, when are you going to photograph the moon? The Hubble people, which is NASA, they said, well, the reason we don't photograph the moon is because it's too bright and we just can't expose the film properly. All right? A few years later, NASA announces, hey, Hubble takes photographs of the moon. And it took close to 1,500 photos, but they only released 4. All right, you can go to the Hubble Telescope website, and it'll show you 4 photographs of the moon. 4 out of at least 1,800 photos.
Why do you think they're doing that, Jose?
Well, I don't know, but it should release the photographs in full color.
Yeah,
but they don't. They do it in black and white. Why? Because in color, you will see depth of perception, and you're going to see other things. You're going to see why certain aspects of the moon's surface look the way they do in black and white. In full color, you start seeing smoke, you see mining areas, you see water, you see clouds, you see terrains that are definitely unlike what you ever thought in black and white. In full color, you get a total different perspective of what the moon's surface is like.
Wow.
So those astronauts and astronomers and scientists were put off that they had lied to them that they couldn't photograph the moon because it was too bright. And when they did, they only showed you black and white imagery. So there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes.
How interesting.
Do you know my grandmother was the most upset when somebody landed on the moon because my Irish grandmother from Ireland, couldn't understand where everybody went to heaven then. If they landed on the moon, then where was heaven? She just got so confused by it that she died upset, later on died upset, still wondering where heaven was.
Wow.
That is an amazing thought, Brooks. You know why? Because when we die, where do we go? We don't go to the moon.
Well, you went up to the sky, and then people were landing in the sky, so where was heaven? She became so confused by that.
Man, I'll tell you.
I know.
What can I say?
So
the mindset. Okay, well, what started this off for me is back in 1994, I had barely started doing what I wanted to do, what I dreamed of doing in my whole career. I was editing films and video for 18 years at that time. I wanted to always score and edit movies, make music scores for films. I finally landed the dream job. I was working for Jack Chrysler, who's one of the heirs of the Chrysler family, and he hired me to do the music and the editing of one of his films called Wolf Ridge, which, by the way, turned out to be the worst movie ever made.
Right? I don't know. I've been in some bad ones, but go ahead.
No, not like Wolf Ridge. I mean it. And unfortunately, it stars Wes Studi, who was in Dances with Wolves, Avatar, Last of the Mohicans. He was a badass-looking Indian guy, right?
Yeah,
he's great. He's a good friend of mine. We became very good friends when we did Wolf Ridge, and I scored the music for it and everything else. And right after we filmed it, I was doing the last-minute notes that we're going to do layback on a Monday to lay back the music and the audio tracks to the film track over at Glenn Studios and Wood Holly over in Hollywood. Well, the earthquake hit, the Northridge earthquake, okay? So here me and my brother, we're over here struggling to stay on our feet. Now, all the labs are closed. We had a movie premiere set up already in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on that following Thursday, the week of the Northridge earthquake. I wound up cutting the negative to the film over at Image Transform in Burbank under the knife. I did it citing it rather than doing it computerized. So I knew that once I cut the negative, if it doesn't work, we're in trouble. We wound up screening the movie in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Santa Fe on Thursday and Friday, the following Thursday and Friday. And it worked out. The movie turned out to be okay. So I stayed home. I went to see my mom in Roswell, New Mexico, which is my hometown. And on March 5th, 1994, we had a major UFO sighting right over our ranch, which is 9 miles south of Roswell. And sure enough, there was UFOs there. And I filmed 16 minutes of UFO activity. On March 19th, after I was already on hard copy and TV shows like that, there was another thing that showed up on the videos, and these things, they look like flying snakes. At first glance, I thought they were insects. All right? Being very honest, I thought they were insects and birds close to the camera. You can hear me verbalize that. But upon closer scrutiny of the stuff, we started shooting at a high shutter setting, and they were not insects. They were something else. You could see the insects with the little wings and all that. You could see the birds. These things appeared to be like flying snakes, and we termed them rods. So that's where the rods phenomenon came about. And it's become a big controversy because over the years, we have footage of rods entering the ocean, coming out of the oceans, in space, taken by the shuttle, over Mars, taken by Mars photography. And these things are all over the place, and they are not insects. They're something else. And that's how it began back in 94.
I noticed that, you're making a movie about this, and I watched a preview clip yesterday. And I have to play devil's advocate just for a second.
Sure.
Some of them could be argued away as being contrails. Have you heard other people say that?
No, that's a first, man. Simon, what kind of contrail travels in Two Friends of Video?
I agree, but
Three Friends of Video. That's like 3 seconds of video. No,
right. I mean, I understand that I'm basing that purely on the little piece of video that you put up on. I think it was YouTube, and that there.
What video are you talking about? I just sent you guys a list of videos. One of them is called Roswell Rods.
I was looking at other stuff. You know, in fact, when you look at those, I've read the Chinese reports and all the rest, and I've read a lot of what their explanations are. And to me, they're the same kind of explanations they give out for almost everything else. Oh, it's really an unmanned aircraft. It's really this. I mean, all my life, all I've ever heard about UFOs is, oh, they're really unmanned aircrafts. And we'll switch to the other interesting one, the White Plains, New York incident, where all the security guards saw the UFOs, and then the national security line came in, and suddenly nobody would speak on camera, and nobody would say anything. And then they blamed those again on aircraft when absolutely everybody saw something different.
Yeah. Well, what can I say?
You also, because you grew up in Roswell, had a different view and look at the UFO situation. Wasn't there a museum down there with supposedly an alien in it?
No, there's a museum in Roswell, and they have a mannequin that was used in the movie Roswell, which was, you know, starred Martin Sheen and all these people. And, you know, people don't realize once a story starts, it goes on. This actual mannequin that was there used in the film, right, has all of a sudden become an alien that is there at the alien museum. It's not true, man, you know.
Oh, we'll bring clarity to it.
My stuff is totally different, man. What I do is I'm presenting you footage, especially the Rod stuff. I mean, I just sent you guys a whole listing of clips.
Well, I've seen a lot of the clips, Jose, and I think that they're my favorite, I think, are the ones that you had coming out of the water and also the ones coming in the caves. And, and they do. They look like little bugs. I think that's what people keep trying to say they are.
Yeah, well, you know, there's been a big controversy over the years. I mean, Monster Quest and the History Channel tried to debunk me. They did a whole one-hour show on me. They promised they were going to do well by me and present the evidence that I wanted presented. And instead, the whole show was all about debunking me, you know.
Well, that's
they did a
awesome
camera test with a high-speed camera and a camcorder at night, which is what I've always been against. I said, don't shoot at night. When you shoot at night, you compromise your imagery, because you have to set your camcorder at the lowest shutter setting, which anything that you throw in front of it, like a baseball, or you wave your hand in front of the camera, it's going to become a blur because you have limited light coming in. They did a camera test with a high-speed camera and a regular camcorder at night, and they shook some leaves, some trees, you know, and these moths and stuff came out, and they looked like rods. But they're not rods, man. They were blurred imagery of insects. And
yeah,
they knew what they were doing.
There's a clear difference between the two.
They knew what they were doing.
I'll be perfectly serious with me.
Huh?
I'll be perfectly serious with you. A similar, although completely different, thing happened to my wife. She was contacted by Katie Couric's people. This was several years ago. And they said, we're going to do this program. You know, we want to keep this person behind bars. it was a killer, you know, who was up for parole, and
right.
this gentleman had killed my wife's grandfather. They came and camped out for a day. They shot all sorts of stuff, and when the show went on air, Jan and her family were portrayed as a bunch of whack jobs, and the killer was an American hero.
Are you serious? Man.
Yeah, I'm absolutely serious. I mean, truth in press, there isn't any.
No.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, the Monster Quest people and History Channel deliberately did a test with the camcorders at night. If they would have been honest and sincere about their investigative study about the rods, they would have also done a daytime scenario using the high-speed camera and my sky fishing protocol, which I developed to eliminate any anomalies from daytime shooting with regular camcorders, and I call it the sky fishing protocol. But they didn't do that. Instead, they did an all-night test, and they said, rods are nothing but insects, and that's the way they left it. And you know what? Once I prove rods are real, which I am going to do that, I have Tiger Woods footage. Tiger Woods, my buddy, golf player, was shot by CBS at a 5,000 frames per second high-speed camera in broad daylight doing a swing. Well, guess what? Once he swings the club, the golf club, a rod flies through above his head, a white rod.
Wow.
And everything's in super slow motion. Now, CBS told me they will charge me $45,000 for the license.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. It's $45,000. But I guarantee you, once I get my hands on that footage, I'm going to prove that not only rods are real, but this is Nobel Prize time, baby.
Yeah, I don't doubt it at all. I've seen so much of the footage that I don't doubt your footage.
It's an entity that exists among us. And it's a living biological entity of some kind that has intelligence. And once I get my hands on this Tiger Woods footage, I'm going to go back to the History Channel and Monster Quest, and I'm going to sue them for blasphemizing me and for lying to the American public, deliberately lying by not doing the correct tests, and for the damages they've caused me because, I've had death threats about the Monster Quest footage. Jose Escamilla is nothing but a scammer. He's a con man trying to sell insects as rods, all because of Monster Quest and the History Channel. And, Manny, maybe I might get you to help me just nail these guys once I get my hands on that Tiger Woods footage. It does exist, and I guarantee you, heads are going to roll.
Jose, I hope you're successful at it. But, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about that we hadn't got to was your upcoming movie that you're about to shoot called The Battle of Los Angeles, because that also involves UFOs over Los Angeles, which, I've lived all my life, so I have a great interest in what occurs around here. So tell us a little bit about this event in World War II, I think it was 1942, when we had UFOs over Los Angeles.
Manny, this is one of my best films, and, I have about 8 or 9 films under my belt, right about now. The Battle of Los Angeles is the ultimate movie I'm doing. I mean, this is the one that's, it's got to be perfect. It's my biggest undertaking. What happened in 1942, February 25th, 1942, about 11 weeks after Pearl Harbor, is a squadron of about 25 to 30 silver discs flew over Los Angeles, and then a big, huge, 500-foot diameter, lozenge-shaped object came over Culver City and hovered there for about 3 hours. And the Army started firing upon this guy. They shined the searchlights on it. They fired upon it right over Culver City, and the object did not move. They couldn't bring it down. It slowly flew southward to Long Beach and over to San Pedro, that fired upon it there, and then the thing just kind of real quickly zipped back to Culver City, where they fired upon it again, and they were using 12.5-pound anti-aircraft shrapnel shells on it, and then finally took off over the Pacific Ocean unscathed, you know, wasn't brought down.
What I found interesting is I noticed the L.A. Times carried a long article on it.
Yeah, the L.A. Times, there was an L.A. Times photographer, Jennings, I believe was his name, that photographed right over Baldwin Hills the event where, you know, they had the searchlights on it and there was explosions hitting it. He took four photos, of which only one was used by the L.A. Times. I don't know what happened to the other three, but and I'd like to get my hands on those. But, you know, this is 1942. And what happened was, because of the war, this event was kind of squashed under the rug of history. You know, it wasn't until 1971, I believe, when the Marshall Memorandum, that was George W. Marshall, who was a four-star general, had written a memorandum to President Roosevelt about that event. And he said, look, these things and that big, you know, saucer that was over L.A., they were not conventional aircraft. In fact, we believe they were interplanetary objects, all right? And three of them were brought down. One of them was brought down near San Clemente Island. Another one over Los Angeles Forest over here, Los Angeles Crest, I believe, and one in Long Beach. It was a Volkswagen-sized object. And the Army and the Navy retrieved these, and they were taken to where Area 51 is located, all right? Now, this was back in 1942. The Pentagon, official Pentagon release February 25th, that following morning, was that it was nothing but a weather balloon. That was the first time the weather balloon excuse was used to explain away a UFO event. Now, remember, the Roswell UFO crash happened in 1947. And people think that was the first time the weather balloon excuse was used. No. This was used in 1942 during the Battle of Los Angeles. So what I'm doing with this movie is I'm recreating some of the battle sequences according to eyewitness accounts. I have some of the remaining eyewitnesses from the 70s and 80s that are going to be in the movie. And unfortunately, we lost the youngest one. His name was Scotty Littleton, who I'm dedicating the movie to. He was 8 years old when the UFO flew right over their property as the military was firing upon it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he recently passed away. He died November 25th. But there's about six more left from that date, and there are going to be... The Battle of Los Angeles is going to be an ultimate documentary. It's going to be my best documentary I've ever made, so it's going to be perfect. Now, there's two major motion pictures that are coming out. One is called Battle, : Los Angeles, Sony Pictures and Columbia Pictures, and it's a $100 million film. It opens with a reference to the Battle of Los Angeles of 1942, and what their scenario is that in 1942, the scout ship came here, we fired upon it, but it was here just to scope things out before they attacked us. And now, present time, they've attacked Los Angeles, and there's a big battle, and it looks like an Iraqi war scenario, you know, American troops in Iraq firing at aliens.
I've seen the trailer for it, but I didn't realize it was attached to this event. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it's really weird because I announced I was making the Battle of Los Angeles movie 3 years ago. And I've been doing it. I've been producing it, you know, piecemealing it because I have no budget. And all of a sudden, Battle of Los Angeles, you know. I have a trademark that I've put towards the Battle of Los Angeles film. I've applied. So it's a TM. It's a trademark, you know, pending. Then there's another movie being done by Asylum Films called Battle of Los Angeles. Not the battle, but Battle of Los Angeles. So, and that movie is a stinky one, man. It's one of those B-Flix. They're going to release it on the 15th of March of next year. Battle Los Angeles is coming out on the 11th of March. My film, if I get it finished in time, will be released on February 25th, 2011.
But what I like about what you're doing is that it's a documentary-style kind of thing, right?
I'm doing a real movie.
Oh, it's a real movie with the real people, and it's going to be great.
Yeah. I'm doing reenactments, but I'm doing this documentary film style like as if it was a theatrical feature. So
I don't suppose by any chance that, you know, that there are any remaining photographs or, you know, film of the event.
I had the only army footage ever taken of the event in 1942. I own it.
Wow.
It's the actual footage of the event when they shot at it in San Pedro, California. I purchased it from a guy back in 2001 whose grandfather used to have people come over to his house. What I did is I put the word out that I was looking for moon UFOs. And UFO footage of any kind for my movie, UFO, The Greatest Story Ever Denied. This is in 2001. I received a video from an estate sale out of Florida, Boca Raton, Florida. And it turns out that this guy used to work at ABC Studios, and almost like every other month, people would come over to his grandfather's house and watch this footage. Well, when I received the VHS tape of the 16mm footage I was going to purchase, I go, holy moly, man, this is the Battle of Los Angeles right there. You know, and it's only like about a 2.5-second clip, you know. And I go, wow, what is this? So I got the 16mm footage, had it transferred to digital, and sure enough, this 2.5-second clip is of the Battle of Los Angeles, 1942. Vintage.
That's incredible.
I own it. All right? So what I'm doing in my new film is I'm recreating even that sequence. I've already recreated it, actually, using some of the current software and everything else that I've got. And it's just going to be an amazing documentary, docu-action drama documentary. I'm going to have real actors portraying some of the characters, you know?
I am very much looking forward to watching it.
It's going to be awesome, Simon. I have to say, of all the films that I've done, you know, the last 10 years or so, this movie is my, how can I say it? This is my marker. This is the film that's going to make me a filmmaker of renown. This is the movie that has to be perfect. You know?
Well, you know, one of the things yesterday I was going through looking at videos on Area 51, and they were showing that there is a thing called the Revised Engineering Program, in which they take the state of the art and can recreate copies, and they were showing how people have actually taken photographs of these spaceships coming out of this Area 51. So they had to copy it from something. So, you know, so I go, well, I wonder how far back, and you're saying they got three spaceships at that time. It's a possibility.
Oh, yeah, this has gone back to the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Area 51 was a designated secret air base, you know, back in the day.
Right. In 1996, they said William Perry, former Secretary of Defense, actually came out and finally in 1996 admitted Area 51, but everybody knew it existed.
Yeah, everybody that was in the know, that was part of the top secret, you know, cosmic secret categories, they knew, you know. It wasn't until the 90s, or late 1996, that it officially became known that Area 51 existed. And even then, Bill Clinton went on record and said, Area 51 does not exist. Okay? And this was after information that already came out. He still went on record. Oh, there's no such thing as Area 51.
Monica Lewinsky didn't exist either, so we all understand that.
Exactly.
Jose, Area 51 is a subject that I just love. I mean, it's the material of so many books, so many movies. I mean, you can't write fiction better than, you know, the true stories about Area 51. But, you know, has it lost its value? I was thinking about this earlier today. You know, is it now a case of let's play up Area 51 to draw attention away from some other site?
Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. Back in the mid-90s, there was a lot of activity going on at Roswell, okay, in my hometown, Roswell, New Mexico. I remember my grandfather back in the 60s and early 70s, where he would be shooting his rifle into the ground. He'd come out of his house, and he'd be all pissed off, man. Pardon my friend. He'd be all angry, and he was shooting into the ground and cursing, you know. And I go, "What's going on, Grandpa?" He says, "There's people underneath the ground here." Now, we lived 2 miles south of the airbase there in Roswell. Now, this is the airbase where they brought the aliens to this hangar, the original Hangar 18. It was actually Hangar 80. And he took me into his house, and he says, "Listen, put your ear to the ground." I could hear what sounded like semi-trucks. You know how they park and the screeching of the brakes and that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Underneath our property. Our property is like 2.5 miles south of the airbase.
Oh, my gosh.
There were underground activity going on. And you could hear voices. You could hear people yelling. You could hear people laughing. You could hear these trucks taking off. And this was like in 1967, all right, 66. I was 14 years old. Now, critical thing, man. One of my cousins used to have a gas station on the base. This was after the base moved out. Now, the base moved out in 1968, all right, but there was still activity going on. My cousin Roy, he had a gas station there on the base, close to Hangar 80, which was the Hangar 18, where the aliens were originally. And the gas station carcass is still there today. But, you know, I used to go on the base, and we go over there, smoke a few joints, drink a few beers. And he said, "Jose, I got to show you something." He drove me to the tarmac, one of the tarmacs where the airplanes landed and everything else. Because what he used to do is he used to go in there and replace light bulbs to the landing lights, all right?
Did he go underground?
For the tarmac, the landing lights, you know.
Oh, I see, okay.
So when airplanes come in, you see the lights, you know.
Right.
So he used to replace bulbs whenever they burned out. You know, they say, "Hey, man, went this, go over there and fix the lights in the quadrant," whatever. But he took me there, and there were all these little God, how can I explain? They were little covered things, man. They were popping out of the ground. They were little canopy things, and they had the open area where the light shined through. And, you know, they were covered sort of when the rain hit, it would not burn the light bulbs out. You know, when water hits a bulb,
mm-hmm.
it'll zap it. But they had these canopy things alongside the landing strip. Well, he took me to a couple of them. Well, there was no light bulbs in there at all. And I said, "Well, what happened? Did it burn out?" He said, "No, check this out." He would light up a cigarette, and then he'd hold it up to this little light canopy thing, and the smoke would be sucked in. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yes. I know
so
exactly where you're going.
That these were vents. These were little vents that were disguised as lights on the runway, all right? And he lighted a cigarette, and the smoke would go in. I said, "Whoa, what the heck?" He says, "Man, there's underground activity. This is a vent for air, you know." So it was just kind of crazy. And there's another number of things that are going on in Roswell right now, even today.
Like what?
They have NATO jets there. NATO, white jets, big jets. They've had them there since the 90s. 80s, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, there's no airbase there, yet they have international pilots coming in that exist there. You know, they have these huge white jets stationed there in Roswell today. So
well,
what's going on?
I want to come back to Area 51, then we'll come back to Roswell a little earlier.
Roswell is the new Area 51 is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I know. And why? Because you asked me, basically Simon was talking about maybe Area 51 doesn't have any use, but for those of us who lived here for a period of time, we believe they've been hiding experimental aircraft there. Earlier, you and I talked a little bit about how they used to fly the Aurora, which the government claims doesn't exist, which anyone who lives in Los Angeles knows better.
We saw it when we were out driving that one day.
Yep. Ash and I had an opportunity. We were in the general area, and we saw one come in. Let me explain the Aurora for those who are listening. The famous Blackbird, which was the highest flying and the fastest airplane we had, flew about 60,000, 70,000 miles in the air, Mach 2 or Mach 3, has been replaced by the Aurora, which flies around Mach 5 and basically can fly as high as 80,000 to 90,000 feet in the air. Well, of course, they claim they've never made this, but they were flying at experimental flights, and it goes so fast they would have to start coming down over the Pacific Ocean to get their altitude low enough to land. So they'd come over Los Angeles, and it would just cause this horrendous sonic boom that people in Los Angeles thought were an earthquake in the 90s. And
right. They
had the hardest time hiding it. And though, you know, and if you people who live in Los Angeles have a little exposure to the airplane business, and most of us know people that have been in it a long time, and everybody pretty well knew what was going on, but they just kept denying, oh, no, we're not flying experimental aircraft, and there's no such thing as the Aurora. But
they were leaving
these contrails over Los Angeles that were just unbelievable to look at.
And the B-2 Spirit is supposed to be the invisible stealth bomber.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, that's been around a long time, honey. But that hasn't been the problem. Most of those were tested elsewhere. But these particular ones were tested over Los Angeles. Well, they were actually flying around the world. There have been sightings in Scotland, all over the place. But because they home-based them at Area 51, we saw a lot of them because they just literally had to drop altitude to get into land. And at that speed, what they would do is they'd fly a couple F-117s next to it to try and hide the radar. But they weren't fooling anyone in Los Angeles. Everybody took a blind eye, and we all chuckled about it. But believe me, Area 51 is still active in the strangest ways.
But this is my continual question. Isn't Area 51 actually an area that they're trying for the defense of our country to protect it so that people, if they kept it secret, which they can't in today's world, then this would be an area that they could keep secret with the special aircraft for our defense?
Well, first of all,
Area 51 is nothing more than a research facility.
Right.
And what they do there is they do high-end, top-secret research and development of back-engineered extraterrestrial aircraft to serve only the Department of Defense. Let me tell you something that's going to freak you out. The Aurora is so outdated, all right? When the Aurora stuff started coming out in the 1990s, and we are now 60 years advanced from anything. We have right now, and I have photos taken by the Department of Defense that were brought out by a guy named Michael Schrat. If you guys want to do an incredible interview, you got to contact Michael Schrat. I will give you his information. What's that? What?
No, it's all right. Go ahead, Jose.
This guy, Michael Schrat, has all the patents, all right, that have been applied for by Northrop Grumman, Lockheed, you name it. He has all the patents for the advanced technologies of flight. There is one craft that's been flying around since the mid-80s. It's invisible. It's a craft that looks like a flying triangle, and it was made by Northrop Grumman, and Lockheed. And this thing, the photograph was taken of it by a F-14 fighter pilot, taken of this craft that was flying by. You can see through it. It looks like, you remember Wonder Woman? You know, that airplane that she flies? And you can see through it. This thing, and this has been around since the mid-80s, people, right? There's a patent that was applied for by Northrop Grumman and Lockheed, and he's got the goods on all this kind of stuff. Right now, the state of affairs is this. All the aircraft that we have flying above us, stealth aircraft, including this invisible airplane, saucer, whatever you may call it, NASA and the Department of Defense and the Army and all that kind of stuff, the Air Force, they are 60 years ahead of what anything we might have fathomed. All right? In the 1980s, they had this aircraft that was invisible. Okay? But it was there. It was an aircraft, a U.S. aircraft, but it was invisible. So everything that you think now is up to date, no, we're not up to square on anything. We are so much in the fog, and they've spent trillions of dollars. The black ops objects, Rumsfeld, during 9/11, he says, oh, I don't know what happened to $10 trillion. It kind of disappeared. Yeah, it disappeared into black ops stuff, man, the technologies that we have right now. Have you noticed in the last 8 years there has been a boom of computer technology? I mean, you're talking iPhones. You're talking all sorts of technology that's made available all of a sudden to the public.
Well,
this technology was available.
You can't say that to Simon, Jose, because Simon is anti-I, aren't you, Simon?
Oh, I hate anything that begins with the letter I.
No, this technology has been around since the 40s. All right? We've barely been given it now in the, you know, the 2010, 28, 29. I mean, technology was available back then. It was back engineered technology. But they've only given it to us now in the last 5 or 6 years.
Who's given us?
Well, cell phone technology. You know what phone is?
Sure.
That's a Tesla, a Nikola Tesla device. Nikola Tesla developed a cell phone back in 1896. Okay? He was shooting amperage over the airwaves. That's all the cell phone is. It's shooting amperage over the airwaves.
Right.
People don't realize this. That was developed and invented in 1896 by Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And when did we get cell phone technology? 10 years ago. Come on. You know? There's a lot more than meets the eye.
It's amazing. Tesla was a great scientist whose work is somehow not advertised or discussed as much as it once
was. It's been suppressed. It's been suppressed by the government. Nikola Tesla was the greatest inventor of our time. They gave the credit of electricity to Thomas Alva Edison.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Who was a proponent of DC, direct current, which is totally wrong. Nikola Tesla invented alternating current, which is what we exist under right now. Back in 1896.
That's correct. All the discoveries revolving electricity were done by Tesla, who's the father of that particular field in science, and has been for as long as I can remember.
I will interject. It's not that he was the father, because there were two. It was actually Tesla and Westinghouse.
Westinghouse was his funding person, man. J.P. Morgan and Westinghouse were the ones that actually allowed Tesla to do what he had to do. But they controlled it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And so much of Tesla's work has disappeared.
Yeah.
Yes, it has. And a lot of people blame that on Edison as well.
Oh, there is no question about that. I watched a documentary on that very subject a few months ago, and it was very clear that, you know, Tesla was not, you know, on Edison's Christmas card list.
No, in fact,
no.
Edison has been so deified in history that people don't really know that he was really a rotten guy. He was.
He was a total jerk, man.
Nikola Tesla
was the guy back in the day.
Well, in fact, a lot of people don't know that Edison really obstructed motion pictures. I took 10 years of the Supreme Court for ruling that he couldn't own every single movie made in the world. And he managed for years to stop anybody from making movies besides himself. And that's why you don't see any other movies from about the 1890s till around 1910, and why the movie industry took off so quickly around 1911, which is when he was the Supreme Court case ruled against him.
Yeah, there you go. And see, this is the thing. Nikola Tesla was the guy back in the late 1800s. And when you look at the man's accomplishments and the patents that he applied for, it's not public knowledge, you know, if people want to investigate it. But this guy, he had flying starships. J.P. Morgan said, no, I'm not in the business of giving away free energy. If J.P. Morgan would have had any insight, he would have realized that he would have owned the skies, the water, anything that was in the water, anything
on
land.
People are trying to do that now.
he would have been a multi-gazillionaire instead of a billionaire, you know?
He was a multi-gazillionaire, to use your words. He was one of the wealthiest men, and he was one of the most deeply involved in what we call the robber baron period. And by the way, all of these guys basically worked in concert. And you can throw in Henry Ford, who idolized Edison. In fact, he, as you people probably know, he purchased Edison's house and moved it to Florida at some point.
Jeez.
So, you know, these
what
guys,
a waste.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Edison's house is at Fort Myers, and tourists seem to love it, so I don't know if it's such a waste. But but the reality is that these great inventors became products of turning them into superhuman heroes, which they really weren't. They were basically greedy robber barons, not unlike some of the people that Americans complained about now, who are more concerned about their wealth and other items than they are the welfare of their country.
So, yeah, people don't think on terms of what is really going on. There was the Great Depression, and there was the Great Suppression. You know.
Yeah, well, that's always goes on in our country. There's the wealthy.
It goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
Well, the wealthy and privileged never want people to know any more than they want them to know, because it may inhibit something they're doing. And by the way, the same is said for the government, who try to treat the people of the United States like they're stupid and should live our life on what they consider to be a need-to-know basis, which is sounds like the philosophy of such people as Richard Nixon, who was definitely one in that group. And we're not cattle. We're proving in elections more currently. We have a pretty good understanding of what's going on in our government, and we know when we're being screwed. And that's what they don't want us to know. You know, if people pay attention, they're concerned they'll have more communist revolutions. And that's been one of the biggest concerns in the United States, is that an American public that's truly informed might not go along with the program. And they might not.
Jose, can I switch the conversation back to Aurora just for a second? What do you speculate might be the power plant? A scramjet?
Well, you know, the scramjet technology has gone over the limits. I mean, there is a scramjet technology that was probably used back then. I mean, we're talking the Aurora was back in the 90s, right?
Right.
It was 2010. All right? We're way beyond that technology.
What's unusual, Jose, about some of those items are they ran primarily on methane gas, which is something that the government had only now says is a possible source of alternate energy. But all of those high-tech planes ran on methane gas, so I don't know why it's an alternate technology when they're using it as much as they are.
No, I'm telling you this right now, all right? What they were spoon-feeding us is what you just said, all right? In the 1960s, when the Apollo missions were happening, no, the Apollo missions that we saw on TV, the capsules were orbiting Earth. They were not on the freaking moon, man. I have it from firsthand testimony from a guy that was one of the top executives of the Apollo moon missions, Clark McLennan, all right? He said, no, man, the Apollo capsules were just a farce. We had a 9-foot alien that used to drive up to the moon with a special spacecraft that took the astronauts onto the moon's surface under a secret space program. All right? So here we are looking at, wow, the moon Apollo things and this bad TV imagery and everything else. No, man, that's a farce. They were already so far advanced in the technology, and there was an alien that was taking our astronauts up to the moon, moon surface, on a special spacecraft that did not have to worry about the Allen bells and all that kind of stuff. All right, so we've been led to believe that we are an arcane, old-fashioned type of technology that finally made it in the 60s. Come on. There's a lot more going on back then. Remember, we're 60 years advanced in all technologies. In the 1960s, we were 60 years advanced then. So, I mean, right now we have technology. I've got a guy that I interviewed, and he goes, okay, I worked with the Department of Defense, and I was one of the technical guys. I was a technical troubleshooter for certain devices that I can't mention. He says, here's what happens. He says, I'd wake up, I'd have breakfast with my family at 9 a.m. in the morning. A military convoy would come in and pick me up and my other comrades. We'd go to a special location on the base. I would enter an elevator. Boom! About 2 minutes later, the elevator opens. I'm on Mars. I have my tool chest. Me and my guys, we go to our different designated areas. We fix the problem on Mars. We come back to the elevator. Boom! By 6 p.m., I would be transported back to my family, and we'd have dinner. And that was his daily routine. Okay? Sounds far-fetched?
No, this guy is far-fetched.
This is a guy that's a big-time military dude.
Wow.
Has the credentials. So if you think for a minute that Apollo missions and everything we've been told by NASA, we've been programmed, we've been spoon-fed all this crap. No, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, even today.
There is a common theory that, man didn't go to the moon at all. It was all made in a movie set. But you're actually advocating something slightly different.
I'm telling you that, yes, there was a movie set. There were. I met a guy that was Stanley Kubrick's right-hand guy, and he told me, he said, man, Stanley Kubrick was afraid of his life because he did fake some of the moon stuff, you know? He was the only guy that could do it back in the 60s. And for the rest of his life, he feared that he and his family would be killed because of what he did and what he knew. And that's just the way it went down. But now we have these new guys that are coming out, disclosing stuff. I even have evidence of these beams of light that emanate from certain parts of the Earth and go into space. They tie into Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, the Moon, and all that kind of stuff. Moon Rising. Check out my film, Moon Rising. I've got all the stuff. Now, this is International Space Station photography, shuttle footage taken over the last 10 years. You cannot say, oh, that's just an anomaly caused by the resolution of a camera. No. These are photographs taken over the course of 10 years from different cameras, different vantage points, of the International Space Station, the shuttle, you know.
What's that?
And it brings into question, is there beam technology that can beam people up to different planets instantly?
Wow.
So,
yeah. So what happened to the general or the military guys? Is he still around?
Which ones?
The one you were talking about that was, basically going to work with a lunch pail and being...
They're still, yes, sir. They're still around. I know them by name. I'm not going to disclose that on your show.
No.
But
no,
absolutely, they're still around. Heck
wow.
Yeah. And they're willing to come forth if Congress ever wants to do a full disclosure. I'm involved with the disclosure people. These are military people that worked in the black ops programs, that worked in corporate entities such as Lockheed, you name it, Halliburton, all these. These are people that are ready to go in front of Congress and swear under oath and disclose what they know, all right? But we've been trying to get the disclosure done for the last few years, but Congress and the Senate and the White House have not decided to do these hearings. And here we have people, and I'm talking, these are the real heroes of our society, because these are the people that saw what they saw. They saw aliens. They saw the technology that was being reversed. They've seen everything, and they're willing to go before Congress under oath and say, look, this is truth. This is what I saw. You know, if you lie before Congress under oath, you're going away for many years in prison.
Unless you're Oliver North.
Oliver North is just, gosh, don't start me on Scientology, please.
Is Oliver North a Scientologist?
No. What I'm saying is I might as well start talking about Scientology.
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm talking about, Brooke.
Right.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with L. Ron Hubbard that a 12-gauge can fix.
Yeah, right. Anyway, yeah.
And you lived in Southern California long enough to have seen the wackiness of Scientology, I'm sure, Simon.
I was
the
theater director. I was the theater director for Celebrity Center over on La Brea back in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And I was not a Scientologist. Never did sign up for the quadrillion, contract, whatever they make you sign. I didn't buy into it. I was just a Celebrity Center theater director. I actually brought in the guy that owned MCA over at Universal. He came in with two chicks, and he says, Jose, you're not going to sell me a book. I said, no. You're not going to be bothered about people trying to sell you a book. Because what used to happen is I'd invite people to celebrity to these showcases. I showcased some of the top comedians back in the early 80s. You know, Gail Mathias, Todd Rodriguez,
Jose, we
that's
should
a long story. Now I'm deviating from my UFO stuff. But
well, wait a minute.
I got stories about Scientology to blow you away.
Anyway, we should explain to everybody what a showcase is in Los Angeles. That's sort of a series of shows where young talent exhibit their talent, and whether it's plays or other items, sometimes vignettes and various things allow them to advance their career and be seen by agents, producers, and other people within the city. So they're sort of inside the industry shows. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, well, Celebrity Center, which used to be located on La Brea and between Sunset and Hollywood on La Brea, I used to have every Monday open microphone where anybody could come in and sing. Tuesdays, I had comedians. Wednesdays, I had regular rock and roll. Thursdays, I had comedians again. Fridays, I had big acts. I mean, I had people that flew in from all over the country. I had a big band. It's like a 22-piece orchestra. All right, that flew in from Michigan. Gosh. They were like Tower of Power, but bigger. And these guys were great, man.
Your first love was music, because didn't you start off touring the country doing music and singing and writing music?
I was a rock and roll guy back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to tour around with like Tina Turner. Yeah, I had a rock and roll band back in the 60s, and I had UFO encounters happen in those days. But anyway, with the Scientology thing, man, I used to bring in acts trying to make it in the business, and I used to bring in people that would sign them up. One of the guys with this big roly-poly guy, I forget his name, but he was hooked up with the Berman Center, the Berman building right there on Sunset. He used to have his own nightclub there. He was a mafia guy from Vegas, big old roly-poly guy, used to smoke cigars. And he said, Jose, I'm looking for acts for Vegas, this kind of thing. He's a mafia guy. Really, he was tied in with a mob somewhere. I don't know what. Or that's what he told me, at least. And so what I was doing is I was using Celebrity Center to bring in acts to give to him for him to take to Vegas. And he had the whole lower area of the Berman building right there on Sunset. All right? I'm at Berman and the whole thing. And I don't know whatever happened to this guy. He disappeared on me, you know, but for a few years, between 81 and 83.
Did you ask?
Then I got a gig with CBS Studios. I was an editor for their news stuff. And then I started producing my own thing, man. I mean, I had a lot of things that happened in the early 80s. I made good moves. I made bad moves. Bottom line is, here I am stuck in the middle now of the UFO phenomenon. I'm well-renowned for this. And I really didn't ask for it, but it happened, you know. So here we are.
Have you actually spent any time around the Area 51 area?
Absolutely not.
Well, that was plain and simple.
I've spent my time over Roswell, New Mexico, which is the original Area 51, if not the new Area 51.
Yeah. No, the reason I asked is I was looking at some stories yesterday, and obviously everyone wants to get a peek at the infamous Area 51. And I think it was in 1995 the government managed to annex more land, and the favorite spots, which were called Whitesides and Freedom Ridge, suddenly became off limits. And now the only spot that you can take pictures is a place called Tickaboo Mountain.
Right.
It's 26 miles away. And now I kind of know the weather pattern, and it gets hot and it gets hazy. But the government obviously want to hide something.
Well,
Simon,
I've actually been to Area 51 more than a few times, and one of the problems with the Area 51 is it became a party place. And for a long time, there were what are now known as rave parties. They're back in the 50s, and at that time, one of my hobbies was riding motorcycles, and I used to do a lot of desert riding. And people would meet up in that area, and they would party. And, I mean, the parties were pretty over the top. You know, it was during the days where there would be a certain amount of people doing the weird things like LSD, and you'd kind of shake your head like, oh, boy, there goes the neighborhood. I mean, it was really an experience. So it was people were jumping the fence. They were going in. The police were running them out. And it just got to a point where then they jumped in to decide, well, gee, it's upsetting them so much. Let's really mess with them. So it sort of became a problem for them that they really didn't want. And, by the way, the government owns probably 70% of Nevada, and that's one of the reasons, in fact, that was a problem in the recent election, is because basically you've got to deal with the federal government if you're any kind of politician within the state of of Nevada because of it. So Nevada has this weird history of a very uneven relationship with the federal government. So that's how they were able to annex it, is because they literally run the state of Nevada, of what we would call abstention.
Right.
All I have to say this is Area 51, for all of us that are in the know, I mean, there's regular JQ public that has no clue, but for all of us that are in the know within the UFO scenario and everything else, Area 51 is old hat. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You want to go see UFOs? Go to Roswell, New Mexico, because the UFO activity persists there even today. Big time.
Yeah, I was going to ask that because, you know, you really don't see much of that in the newspaper or anything about UFOs in the newspaper. I mean, it kind of stopped in, I'd say, the 80s.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. In the newspapers and the news media, you're not going to see anything about UFOs. On YouTube, which is the biggest newspaper in the world, in the planet, you're going to see all this happening. Why? Because people have a way to present what's going on in today's world. You're not going to see it on Fox News. You're not going to see it on CBS, NBC, ABC, none of those networks that are government controlled by now. You're going to see it on YouTube. Please.
Well, that's true with most of the news around the world. Basically, the Internet is the equivalent of the Gutenberg press at a time in history when the Catholic Church controlled all the information. The Gutenberg press allowed people to print books and, more important, circulars, brochures, underground newspapers. And that's one of the biggest changes in the world in the Internet, in a strange way, is the 21st century of the Gutenberg Bible.
Exactly. What I love about the Internet, which right now, believe it or not, the government is trying to regulate it. They're trying to find a way to make you pay exorbitant amount of money to even be on the Internet, so where they're going to eventually start suppressing what's on there. But the Internet is the only free, non-government-owned network of information.
Oh, I love the Internet.
I have to apologize there, folks. We had a power outage which took everything out for a couple of seconds, but I'm back.
Hi, Simon.
You're always missed, Simon.
You were so missed.
Right. I swear that, you know, the UFOs did it. Well,
no.
The government did it.
No, probably the Pentagon did it.
Well, that could very well be.
Well, you know, I'm hoping you're going to come back and join us when you're in the middle of production and give us some indication of what's going on and with the show while it's going on. It's always fun to follow movies while they're being made. It's a great deal of joy for those of us in the industry because they come with so many fun stories. So we're hoping you're going to bring us some of those.
I have to tell you, my movie, The Battle of Los Angeles, is going to be spectacular.
We're looking forward to it.
The trailer looks
beautiful. Awesome.
Jose, the trailer looks beautiful.
Thank you.
I don't think I've seen the trailer. Can one of you send a copy to me?
Absolutely. No problem at all.
Simon, I sent Ashley all the links.
Okay.
So you've got it.
Jose, let's do a quick shameless commercial here. Where can people find you online?
You can find me on, there's four letters, T as in Tom, B as in Bob, L as in Larry, N as in Nancy, films.com, TVLN films.com. Okay?
And, yep, got it. And Manny, shameless commercial for you. Where can people find you guys?
We can find our books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. Our latest book, It's Not Your Fault, came out last week. It's about weight gain and obesity. You can get us on our website, which is howtoeliminatepayton.com or else mannysdietbook.com, your choice. And although right now we're remodeling the website during the holidays, and we welcome everybody to read this, and we also wish you'd come back and listen to more things that are going on in this country of interest. I think you'll have a good time with the show.
And Jose is doing our webpage, so he's the person updating right now.
And by the way, Jose, I have to give you exceptionally high marks. You have done an absolutely wonderful job.
Well, thank you, Simon. It took me a few days to learn the learning curve of WordPress, but I love WordPress, man. I've never used it before. I usually use Dreamweaver. But, man, what a great program that is, WordPress. That's awesome. We had a few problems here for a few hours, but we're going to get rectified. But, yeah, I love WordPress.
Yeah, it's a fun little program. Okay, we're out of time here. Jose, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk to us. As I understand it, you are currently in New Mexico.
No, I'm on my way.
You're on your way. Okay, have a great what remains of the holiday season. And I do hope that you will come back and talk with us on another program.
Simon, I want to ask you something. Can I ask you a question? Come next year, when I finish making the Battle of Los Angeles movie, I am planning on having a world premiere at the Grauman's Chinese Theater. Okay?
Oh, wow.
And I, of course, come on, first class. And I want to invite you. Of course, Ashley and Manny will always be there, and I want you there on the red carpet thing. I want you to cover the event. Are you on?
I would be honored to do that, Jose.
All right. Well, we're going to do it, man. Mark my words. We're all going to be there.
All right.
Sure. Yes, sir.
I'm ready for the party.
I'm ready for the party. I can't wait.
Last year, I premiered my film Moon Rising at the Emmys Theater. I owned that theater right there in North Hollywood for a whole 24-hour period. That was great.
Okay, we got to wrap this show up. We're running into some time problems, but we're gonna have you back again.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Bye, Simon.
And Manny and Ashley, thank you so much for taking part. I'm talking with you folks is always fun.
Well, we're not sure what you mean, but I hope it is.
Thanks, Simon.
Oh, it is.
They'll always get you in trouble, Simon.
And I'm sure we'll be back again next Tuesday. Same bat channel, same bat time.
Looking forward to it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.